All right, we're back live from Mix 10. Tweet your questions to at CH9Live. We have an incredibly excellent panel today. We have Douglas Crockford, Eric Meyer, John Rezik. We're going to talk about JavaScript. And we're also going to do the first Expert to Expert Live. How are you doing, man?
I'm good.
Is this your first mix?
This is my first mix, and you know, beautiful Las Vegas.
Yes.
You know, great show going on.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So let's dig right in. I mean, you're talking about RxJS, and of course we have the language master, and we have the library master. Let's have a conversation, man.
Yeah.
And we're going to want tweet questions, please. Continue.
Good. So yeah, so I would like to start by asking our guests here, you know, what was the kind of itch that, you know, brought you into this JavaScript world? So let's start with Doug here first.
This wasn't a world that I went into intentionally. Mm-hmm. I mean, 10 years ago, nobody wanted to be the JavaScript guy. But an opportunity came up. I was doing a deal with Turner Broadcasting. They wanted us to build something for them. They thought we had the client technology. It turned out we didn't. And I got this crazy idea, maybe we could use web browsers with JavaScript to build this application. And it turned out that we could, that we delivered it on time and under budget. And I was sort of surprised when I discovered that there was actually goodness in the language, because up to that point, there were no indications at all that there was any goodness to be found.
Yeah. And so, John, what about you? So what kind of, you know, led you to, you know, do jQuery?
I mean, at the time, I was building, you know, different web applications around, you know, 2005-ish time frame. And I was hitting significant cross-browser issues. And I found the APIs that were out there just be too clumsy. And so I set out, and I wanted to primarily create something that could abstract away the cross-browser problems so that I wouldn't have to deal with them in every single project that I did. And ideally, I wanted to be able to, my goal was to be able to write something once in a standards compatible browser, and then I could load it up in any other browser and it would just work. You know, it wouldn't matter what other, you know, if it was IE, if it was Opera, it would just work. And so when I set out, that was primarily what I was trying to do.
And so if you look at the library currently, so what percentage of it is like now dedicated to, you know, dealing with cross-browser issues?
A large part, and especially a large part of the bug submissions that we get are not actually issues with the library itself. Most of them are issues with browsers, and many of them are issues that have never been found in the browsers before. And so a lot of the responsibility for reporting those bugs falls on our shoulders, for example.
So you know, that's a kind of, you know, an interesting thing, that like one of the biggest pain points that web developers have is with like dealing with cross-browser issues. Yet the browser and JavaScript are so intimately connected, but, you know, as a standard, they are not. So can you say a little bit about that as the JavaScript standards guy?
Yeah, so there are two standards organizations who are shepherds of web standards. There's W3C, which does HTML and CSS and that crap. And then there's ECMA, that's responsible for ECMAScript. And it's strange that there is this division, that there isn't a single organization that has control over all of those components. And in fact, until I instigated a meeting between ECMA and W3C last November, the two organizations had never met, had never communicated on any topic of any kind. And when ECMA first approached W3C in order to have this meeting, their response was, well, why would we want to meet with you? And fortunately, we had the meeting. It was very successful, and we determined that we should have another meeting.
Can I ask one question?
Yeah.
I mean, you said an interesting comment there. I mean, and you said, and that crap, which is understandable. But I would ask you, I think you said before that JavaScript is a language for the web, which would translate into being a language for the browser. So it's a language to manipulate HTML, CSS, and whatnot. So how do you feel about that?
JavaScript is a general-purpose programming language. And if you look at the ECMAScript standard, it mentions in passing in a comment someplace that it is used in browsers, but there's nothing browser-specific about the language itself. And that's why we're seeing it in lots of applications which have nothing to do with browsers.
We are.
It's been embedded in desktop applications for a long time. It's in operating systems now, like in, what do you call it at Windows?
Windows Shell. You can write JavaScript,
WSH.
Shell scripts, and run them on Windows.
And what's it called on Macintosh? Anyway, they've got it there, too. It's all over the place. We're now seeing it in server-side applications, in embedded systems. It's all over the place.
Okay. But would you say that predominantly it's inside of web pages? Libraries like jQuery?
There's no question that its role in web browsers is why it's an important language. And so in looking at the language going forward, that is the most important use case that we have to consider.
Excellent.
So, talking about jQuery. When I look at it as a kind of, you know, functional programming guy, I see quite a lot of ideas from functional programming in there. Is that correct? Were you inspired by the functional programming ideas?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've done work in the past with Haskell and Lisp, and I think predominantly, though, the functional techniques used aren't, it wasn't necessarily something tricky. The functional nature is part of JavaScript. It's what makes it such an interesting and elegant language. And in many ways, I tended to embrace that in jQuery simply because it yielded, shorter syntax, more readable code, and allowed you to develop applications in a manner, JavaScript applications in a manner, that were both scalable and understandable. So, I mean, it's in many ways it just makes sense. And that, in JavaScript, in the functional models provided in JavaScript, and like, for example, having anonymous functions, being able to do callbacks and event handlers, that is an incredibly good model for building modern web applications. And that's definitely something that people should embrace.
So going back here, one of the nice things, I completely agree, is that JavaScript is really like a closure-based language where, you have anonymous functions and you can nest class declarations or object literals, I should say, all the way through. But there's one, and in your book you kind of have the good and the bad parts of JavaScript. There's one thing in JavaScript where the scoping of variables is a little bit strange. That's like with in the try-catch blocks. How did that kind of happen? Where the kind of the rules are of the language are suddenly broken, or broken and non-uniform.
Most of the reason why we have uniformity is because Microsoft did such an outstandingly good job of reverse engineering the original Netscape engine, but they didn't get it perfect. And so there were some bits that worked a little bit differently. And so the naming of try-catch variables and what scope they ended up in is a little awkward. It's easily gotten around by always using a unique name in every function for every catch, and then the problems are avoided. So the easy workaround, not a huge problem. Hopefully, we'll that's better specified in ES5, and going forward, the browsers should all have a common understanding of that.
Okay. And so you said that like one of the things that jQuery addresses is the difference in the browsers. Yeah. There's also kind of subtle difference in the different JavaScript implementations, like outside the browser. Is there anything special that you try to do to mitigate that?
Not explicitly so. We're sort of handicapped by the functionality that the browser provides us. Obviously, we're able to do a lot to mitigate the issues relating to the DOM, since we can abstract that away and create our and hide those issues. And at least for the JavaScript language itself, the issues that come up aren't so immediately, people do hit them, obviously, but you aren't going to hit them on day one like you would with the DOM. There's this fundamental differences when it comes to the DOM For example, attaching event listeners.
Yes.
Thankfully, that's been rectified in IE9 here, but that's very much a reality of modern web development. Whereas it would be sort of like saying, well, IE or Firefox, they're great, but they don't have for loops. That's like the fundamental. So I consider the DOM to be a much harder problem in that respect when it comes to compatibility.
Yeah, absolutely. It turns out that JavaScript's portability is extremely good, and I think it compares at least as good or better than any other modern language. There are some problems in the corner cases, and there are some bugs in the definition of the language. But if you stay with the good parts, with the fat middle of the language, it's extremely portable.
Yep.
So I just want to say one thing. We're having some tweeting issues. It is the internet. So I want to open up the floor to questions out to people in the audience. If you have a question, raise your hand.
All right.
And ask.
Yep. One of the nice things about JavaScript and what's going on with browsers and stuff and all this competition is there's a tremendous amount of innovation going on, certainly within the browsers themselves. And I'm just wondering, where do you see JavaScript going in terms of new language innovation and stuff beyond where we're to today?
The thing I'm most concerned about is security. The browser has a much better security model than virtually any other programming venue, certainly better than desktops, but it's not good enough. And so we need to make modifications, I believe, to JavaScript and to the DOM in order to allow us to do things like be immune from cross-site scripting attacks, to have mashups made up of third-party components that can't compromise each other. I think that's going to be the important step going forward. That goal is in sight, but there's still some work we have to do.
At least on my end, I continue to be really excited by performance and performance improvements. And I think, I've heard people say that, they'll look at the performance improvements and they'll be like, well, what does it matter? Even if we get, a little bit faster or something, aren't we fast enough already? If you look at, the latest Firefoxes and Chromes and all that, they're all really fast. But the thing is that if you're comparing JavaScript to JavaScript engines, we should be comparing JavaScript to everything else. Like, the faster we can get JavaScript compared to other languages, and getting it closer and closer to the metal, the more things that we could possibly do. For example, they're exposing the OpenGL as part of Canvas. That's some work that's being done I know Firefox is doing that, and I think some other browsers are as well. But the thing is that in order to be able to do manipulating OpenGL from JavaScript, your JavaScript has to be lightning, because you can't be tweaking things with JavaScript and having that be slow. Otherwise, you're going to be hitting 3 frames per second or something. I think what's interesting is that since we've gotten performance to where it is now, we're unlocking whole new problem areas. We want to tackle whole new problem sets, and we realize that we need to be even faster. And so that's what continues to incite me.
Yep. Excellent. So we have another Twitter question, because this is all about interacting with the real world. At ZBrad asks, can you speak to lack of version and challenges of maintainability?
Yeah. So that actually is closely relates to a question that I would have for both of you. I'm personally very much interested in using JavaScript not per se as a programming language, but as a target language, like a portable assembly language. And one of the things that I often wish to do is to maintain invariance. So for example, I take a program in a class-based language where the class is sealed. I'm now compiling it to JavaScript, and now I want to maintain these invariants in JavaScript. But now people can just put stuff in my prototype and so on. So is that like questions about modularity? Is that something you're going to address, or is that a problem?
In the fifth edition, we do provide support for that. So in the fifth edition, you have control over the properties of an object. You can determine which are readable or writable. You can have control over inheritance now. You can seal objects so that new members cannot be added. You can freeze objects so none of its contents can be modified from that point on. We have getters and setters, which you can attach to methods now, which can help in leveling interfaces. So we've done a lot of work in ES5, which should help considerably. But the problem you're going to have, though, is that it's going to be of no help to you at all until ES5 becomes commonplace. Yep. And that's not going to happen until we figure out how to get rid of IE6. But eventually, you'll be able to take advantage of all this stuff.
We already had the funeral for IE6 a couple weeks ago.
So it's not beginning. Dead yet.
It's beginning. Yeah. Well, Dean sent him flowers, so that's a good message.
That's great, but it's not dead yet.
So right I think the issue is that, well, just jump back really quick to the versioning thing.
Yes.
But the is that, I mean, we're hitting very real issues. I'm sure Doug can speak more to this. It's just that, you know, introducing new features into the language, especially new syntactical things that require new syntax, it's fundamentally very, very hard to do, because you want to do it in a way that won't, that's somehow backwards compatible, and it won't be breaking older scripts, which is almost impossible to do. And so it's this is at least a challenge that was very much very real in the original development and when all the work was going on ECMAScript 5 and prior. And because this is just something that, you know, so many people use JavaScript now, and it's on so many web pages, it's really hard to try and like introduce these backwards incompatible changes.
Yeah,
but go ahead.
No, that's a really, really important point.
Yeah.
Because new syntax isn't just ignored or misunderstood on old browsers, it's a syntax error, which means none of the code executes. And where I come from, if we get a syntax error, we don't get paid. So we just cannot tolerate that. So any features that depend on new syntax cannot be used for at least a generation. And so in ES5, we were careful not to require any new syntax. There are a few syntactic changes, mainly to be more tolerant of things which are currently not tolerated. So you don't have to use that stuff in order to go forward.
And so with jQuery, like if you have different versions of your library, how do you kind of keep them apart? Like if you look at, say, C#, where there's, or the CLI, where there's notion of strong names, and you know, I can put things in different assemblies and keep them separate.
Okay.
Do you have a certain mechanism? Do you use conventions to do that, or?
Well, I mean, we tend to operate, you know, very, very, very carefully, very deliberately when we make any changes. We haven't removed functionality from jQuery in years at this point. We haven't removed an API method in years. And even, I don't think we've even changed changed or broken an existing API in a very long time. So at this point, we slowly introduce a new API that we like. But we do it in an incredibly deliberate manner, because we know that once it ships, it's there pretty much forever. And we have to be very careful about the API that we ship. And I think this is pretty much universal to any API design. You know, if you aren't deliberate about the API that you ship and the quality of the API, then you know, you're going to regret it later, because you're going to have to remove it, and it's going to break people's apps, and like it's just this thing that just piles on. So at least for us, anytime we make any sort of backwards incompatible change, we document it extensively, and we provide a backwards compatibility plugin. Since you know JavaScript by its very nature is very extensible, we can make sure that the current version of jQuery behaves and has those quirks that were in the older versions as well. So that way, it makes the upgrade process easier.
Excellent. So we have another question, Al3891. I remember you from PDC. Eric, aren't you a static guy? I don't know about that, but all right. What about the difficulties of reasoning about dynamic programs like JavaScript?
Yeah. So yes, I'm really, you know, I like static typing, because, you know, I always say my brains are the size of a peanut, and, you know, I love the compiler to kind of, you know, catch as many errors as possible. So I like to program in a statically typed language. On the other hand, I really like JavaScript, as I said, as a target language, because it's like, you know, for me, the super assembly language. It has, you know, closures, it's very dynamic, so it doesn't kind of put arbitrary constraints on me as a target language. So I think that it's the best of both worlds. So I can still program in a statically typed language, And then, you know, I just target it towards JavaScript and it runs there. And I then can use all the dynamic features to really implement my model. And then again, like what Doug said in ECMAScript 5, I can still maintain the invariance that my source statically typed source language had, but the target language doesn't need to have static types to achieve that.
So, but essentially what you're saying is, you know, JavaScript is the x86 of the web. We sort of were talking that last night. Does that worry you as a language designer when people are using JavaScript essentially as a result of some sort of compilation?
It's something we never anticipated. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Java VM was supposed to be the VM of the net, or maybe the CLR, and it's really surprising that it turns out that JavaScript is the virtual machine of the net. You know,
well,
but it works.
The untyped lambda calculus. That's the kind of the
there
mother of all programming languages.
Yeah.
So we got a question from the audience. You can just yell it out, my man.
Yeah.
It's a giant security hole. JSONP is a giant security hole. Is JSONP an elegant hack or a giant security hole? It's a giant security hole. And the reason, it kind of points at a number of things, that the security model in the browser was never thought through very well. So there are prohibitions in it from reading data from an alien site, but no prohibition against loading programs from a dangerous site. And then when those programs run, they get the full privileges available to everybody's programs, which is insane. And we're trying to fix that. So we need to fix XHR so that you can get data from anywhere and not have to do tricks in order to obtain it. And we need to provide a way of loading script from anywhere without compromising your security. So both of those are things we have to do going forward.
So I would say, yes, it's a security hole, but it's still a very nice hack. So.
All right, so we've got two more questions from the tweet world. The first one, I'm going to skip to the second one first. What are your thoughts moving towards a more flexible intermediate language and use the browser as a platform? So I'm assuming they think that JavaScript's not a more flexible intermediate language. What do you think?
I think what a lot of people don't realize is that JavaScript is a very, let's say, dumb language. It takes on the attributes of its container, of its host. I mean, like, JavaScript, as most people experience it, is the DOM. I mean, they're completely intertwined. There is no difference in a lot of ways. What I think the problem is that at least at this point, no one has come up with a better alternative to the DOM.
I think you have.
Well, sir, the ways are around it. But at least that there's no better language for traversing these HTML, XML structures than what JavaScript provides. And, there's, like, a while back, for example, Firefox had the ability, you could hack it and you could get, like, Python running in like a script tag type of thing. It was pretty crazy. But the thing is that if you look at the code that was done, and like they're trying to use Python to like grab and traverse, and it was really rough. And Python's a cool language. And same thing with Ruby. I think what people don't realize is that the fantasy of how that sounds, of like being able to have any language, be able to like script in the browser, and the reality are just two completely separate things.
Absolutely.
And in a lot of ways, I think JavaScript is a really great language for this.
Certainly. Well, I mean, history is proving it. I mean, it's the most widely used language in the world. So we have another question. How about jQuery 1.4 support in Visual Studio 2010? I don't think anybody can speak to that, but...
Well, as my understanding is that it's shipping with jQuery 1.4.1, and so it's shipping with IntelliSense support, and it's part of the MVC stuff. So yeah, it's in there.
Oh. Okay, so we're running out of time, but we have to ask each of you one more question, real quick. What's the hardest problem you're working on right now?
Security. Trying to fix the browser.
Yep. Okay.
So I'm trying to make it easy to combine event-based programming and asynchronous programming and doing that kind of, you know, in a high-level way, in a compositional way, such that you can just glue these things together, just like, you know, like wiring things up, you know, with boxes and arrows and, you know, democratizing, you know, layering on top of things like jQuery and just adding yet another layer of abstraction.
Excellent.
For me, it's got to be mobile browser testing, and falling onto that mobile browser support. It's it makes desktop development and regular browser development look like a cakewalk. So yeah.
So I mean, any more questions from the crowd? Ask some questions. Shy. Okay.
This is not a question, but just a general statement that,
right,
that the work that you guys are all doing, you know, in the browser and JavaScript and stuff is just, it's just absolutely tremendous. And to see, you know, the innovation and stuff that's gone on within JavaScript and the browser is just, it's exciting to see. So thanks a lot.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely.
Where's my applause sign? Yeah. You guys are titans. Excellent. So I guess we do have one more tweet. I believe this must be the last tweet.
Well, so that's
all right. When are we going to get jQuery written in VBScript?
That's not happening.
Yeah. That was an easy one. Excellent. So I still haven't seen the famous zero sign. Giorgio, you got a question? One last question? Or no?
Yep.
This is live.
Yes.
This is Channel 9. It's okay to be informal, man.
Do you think that JavaScript can be even faster? And does it make sense to still talk about JavaScript performance at given where we are now with most of the browsers?
It can still go faster. We could also do things to the standard to make it easier for the engine makers to make it go faster, mm-hmm. particularly in simplifying it and removing some of the features that make compilation unnecessarily difficult.
Excellent. Well, hey. I think we are almost out of time. I just saw the famous zero. Thank you guys for coming on.
Yep. Thank you very much for being here today.
And we will see plenty more of Eric, and we will see you guys again, hopefully, on Channel 9.
Yep.
I wish you would have some more questions, but the internet is the internet. And I'm waiting for them to turn us off. So